This is truth be told.
That not only are there reptilians here,
new evidence of UFO fleets.
We were close to nuclear war.
To help you transform so that you can live your highest truth.
We're not being told just because we're not ready for it.
Radio stations of frequency, vibrational.
I was a homicide detective with LAPD.
UFOs increase. Visitations. How many of us have seen Stranger Things? It seems far-fetched, but there are a lot about this series that might actually come from a true story. Today we have on the show director and host of Strange World on the Discovery Channel, Christopher Garitano, talking about his documentary called Montauk Chronicles, where we talk about the Montauk Project, which is a conspiracy theory that alleges there were a series of U.S. government projects conducted at Camp Hero in New York for the purpose of developing psychological warfare and even time travel. And also we're going to touch on how the extraterrestrials might even be a part of this. Well, let's get into it. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, director and host of Strange World, Christopher Garitano. There he is.
Hello.
How are you doing, Mr. Christopher?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I hope I pronounced your last name correctly.
Yeah, it was pronounced perfectly.
Perfect. Well, first of all, thank you so much for being here, being first time in Truth Be Told Studios, and I know you're in Florida. I'm here in California, so we have everybody in between that we're going to be talking to today. And a lot of people have probably not heard of Montauk Project or Camp Hero before. And so first of all, we want to just dive right in on how you got involved, because, again, how did you become aware of this conspiracy theory or project or anything, that however you want to relay it?
I became aware of it because I grew up on Long Island. I later lived in New York City, but the Camp Hero Air Force Base, which is it's the Montauk or Camp Hero Air Force Station, is located in a town that's on the very eastern tip of Long Island, Montauk, New York. And so very early on, you know, my family would spend our summer vacations out there because it was ocean beaches, and
right.
A lot of people don't understand because they hear this story and they think it's just this base, and it's not. Mostly the town is it's a good place to have a nice week or 2 week vacation, you know. There are beaches and resorts and things to do out there, and so we would spend our summers out there, you know, a couple of weeks or a week or whatever. And people would camp out there and go fishing and even shark fishing. There was just so many things to do out there. But I remember one time I was walking on a place called Montauk Point, which is right on the Atlantic Ocean, very rocky beach. And I was walking with my uncle and my father, and I was a little kid. And I'm walking on the beach, and what I saw were these giant cylinders with spikes sticking out of them. And I know they were military grade, you know, things that I've seen in old photos.
Right.
And again, this is a archaic Air Force base. It wasn't defunct yet at that time. You know, there was still a light operation going on topside. But a military man came out and he stopped us and told us to go in the other direction. I had no idea this base was there. I didn't have any clue. In fact, I didn't even notice the Sage semi-automatic ground environment radar tower, the infamous tower for the people that know about this story. I didn't notice it until much later, you know, when I was in my, I believe I was in my late 20s when I started looking into it,
right.
Really looking into it. And so, but somewhere in the early 90s, there was a independently published book by Preston Nichols and a co-publisher, co-author. And it wasn't a very thick book. There wasn't a lot to it. And I remember getting my hands on it because, of course, you know, I was always interested in the mysteries of the unknown, and especially anything that happened where I grew up. And mind you, I grew up around a lot of weird stuff, you know.
I'd say so.
Amityville Horror was only 10 minutes or so away from my house. So growing up with that, I was obsessed with that ghost story. And then at the time, during the Satanic Panic, there was a sensationalized murder right in the heart of my town.
Oh, really?
Everybody, yeah. And there was a book written by a man named David St. Clair called Say You Love Satan. It was a paperback, true crime paperback at the time. And that happened right in my town. And really, it was, you know, they were suggesting satanic ritual murder in the woods. It was a kid killing another kid. And so all of that, and now, okay, there's this strange military base. So the book by Preston Nichols talked about experiments, contacts with extraterrestrial, you know. Also, there was this whole idea that there were young men being used in the experiments, mm-hmm. but it never really discussed kidnapping or murder or the beatings or everything that I learned may have happened later. It was really just talking about how kids were maybe used in time travel experiments. And there was this legend of a monster that came from another dimension, you know, like Forbidden Planet, the monster right. from the id, which was called Junior, that still roamed the base. It seems so far-fetched in comparison to the things that I grew up listening to and seeing, you know, on Leonard Nimoy's In Search Of.
Oh, I love that. I used to love watching that.
Me too. To this day, I do. And you know, the large collection of books here I have in my office that I've been collecting since I was a kid, my little paranormal library over here, it was so different. But there was something about it that was off-putting. So honestly, I read the book, I put it away. I had no interest whatsoever until later, even though I could recall the encounter with the
right.
gentleman from the military on the beach when I was a kid. I just, for some reason, I wasn't that interested. And it wasn't until later, I made my very first documentary, and a gentleman who appeared in that documentary said to me, you know, you're from Long Island, you should do something on the Montauk Project. And I said, I don't know, man. I read Nichols' book and I'm just not impressed at the information. It just doesn't see, it just seems so far-fetched. And in fact, it seems like these gentlemen were cherry picking from, you know, 60 years plus of science fiction.
Right.
And I wasn't interested. But I think I meditated on it for a minute and I thought what would be interesting would be to visit these men and start from scratch. So in other words, I had no interest whatsoever in adapting the book into documentary form because it really wasn't much to it. I would want to start from scratch and absorb my own perspective and begin my own investigation in terms of getting information to construct a good story out of the doc. And I think the most fascinating thing to me at the time was I was going to sit with these elderly men and they were going to tell me this crazy tale of experiments and aliens and everything you could possibly. I wasn't going to make fun of them. I didn't want the documentary to be humorous.
Right.
I just was excited. I love stories. I grew up with a family that told stories, everything from ghost stories to just stories of their lives, you know, around the dinner table or post around the fireplace. And some of the best times just listening to, you know, raconteurs tell stories.
Right.
It's just fantastic. So I was excited about capturing that for an audience. And I wanted to give that to the people that would watch. And I didn't really, not that I didn't have a vision for it. I knew I wanted to recreate the stuff they were talking about. It's just, I let things unfold organically when you speak to people. And so that's it. That's how it started. And I went to Fort Myers, Florida, and I spoke to Al Bielek in his backyard. And it was great. And it was just as I expected. This old man was telling me a story. And just these outlandish things at the time. Oddly enough, Alfred Bielek and most of what he said way back then in 06, a lot of it in terms of technology and developed technologies and other things he predicted came true. Now, I don't know if he was looking into other sources or resources for that, but let me rewind back and just quickly tell you what the Montauk Project was said to be. Roughly between 1971 and 1983, it said that there was a secret deep underground experiment beneath the surface of Camp Hero. So there was a topside operation, which was light, and lax. And right. then underneath, levels underneath the ground, it said that there were mind control experiments. There were time travel experiments. There were wow. interdimensional experiments using extraterrestrial technology. And one of the things that really captured my attention throughout all of this and to this day that I really do believe happened, because it's happened in other scenarios and in other places, and it's been proven, is that undesirables, in this case, runaway children, were kidnapped and used as human subjects in these mind control experiments. Now, for anyone that's not in the know, okay, this type of experiment has happened in Holmesburg Prison, in the MK Ultra experiments, and all the other MK experiments. So if you look into these things, you'll find that there's a lot to support this information. These aren't conspiracy theories, it's conspiracy fact. So as I got deeper into, and it's not like I disregarded the alien stuff or the time travel stuff. I right. don't think that's a possibility. It's just such a weird, it was the first time I ever encountered a mystery, okay, that incorporated all of this stuff into one place, beings from other dimensions, time travel, gray aliens, insectilians, reptilian aliens, like this whole menagerie of different creatures. But at the center of it is this really horrific story of murder and experimentation using essentially orphaned kids, you know, like kids that ran away from home, street kids from New York or suburban Long Island. And they were, you know, this is the 70s and early 80s. So right. it's not like it is now. It's not easy to just find someone or locate people. And the amount of people that go missing every year on record is astonishing. It will blow anyone away. A lot of people don't realize how many people went missing every year from that time period. So it only makes sense in line with, let's say, the type of people that were being chosen as these human subjects in these other experiments that we did prove, that it just makes so much sense that something like this happened. What was really odd for me was that you had this story of time travel and this heroic story of Preston Nichols cutting the power just before the monster ate everyone and ate the base and destroyed everything, right? But then there's this story of runaway kids being beaten and, wow. you know, pardon me, but this is what happened. They say the kids were raped and beaten to destroy their personalities, break their psyche down, and then used for a variety of things. But one of the main things was a type of Manchurian candidate type psychic soldier or mind controlled person that would go and assassinate someone.
I mean, I don't mean to stop you there, but you know, if Hollywood, you know, they do a lot of these type of movies. I mean, if you see, you know, Jason Bourne and, you know, and many other, like even Stranger Things, you see them manipulate the mind to create these soldiers that, you know, if they lose them, it doesn't really matter. Because like you said, these kids were just off the grid kids that either, you know, nobody wanted, or street kids or foster kids, whatever they were. But I'm curious, and touching into subjects like this can be very put yourself out front, where people start to notice you, government might start noticing you, agencies might notice you. Was there ever a moment that you got nervous about bringing this to light, where a lot of times, like I said, most people haven't heard about this project before?
I thought about that a lot. So I'll try and put it in perspective for you, because it's a lot of years doing this, and
right.
there's some weird things that have happened along the way.
I'm sure.
So I think the most threatening thing in these situations, because there's so many people that are discussing conspiracies and over the years, and it's gone through different stages on how people accept them. In the last few years, it's been shunned, and you're almost like a pariah if right. you dare believe in any conspiracies. Well, you can suggest that's being said because there's a conspiracy going on and the people that are fueling that conspiracy don't want you to believe in conspiracies. Then there's another part to it. So I thought about it. I think the most dangerous thing for anybody that doesn't want any more of these things to be revealed, because if you do your research, and again, another mm-hmm. slogan that went out there is that it was against you thinking for yourself and doing your own research. I watch this stuff and it's like, right. Oh, man, how come people can't see the manipulation that's going on? They're afraid that these things will come out, and past conspiracies and government programs like this have been proven, but a lot of people are so allergic to even considering that. They don't want to look at true history, and our history is being manipulated right now. The greatest threat to a government anywhere in the world that committed atrocities like this is intelligent discussion.
Oh yeah.
So if I was just some jackass that is sitting here going on and on and on, and I just, no offense to anybody, but going on and on and on about reptilians and time travel and Preston's first story, that's fine because it's really far-fetched, at least now, to a lot of people, and they enjoy that and they want to hear, oh, maybe it's true. I've focused on the fact that I truly believe there was a government program underneath the base where children were kidnapped and murdered. And this is not to say I don't believe in extraterrestrial, intelligent extraterrestrial life. I do. And I've had what you will call a paranormal experience. I've had a couple of them. But they're not in overabundance, and I'm very sober about them, and I know that something strange happened.
Right.
However, in all of these stories, you have hucksters and hoaxsters that attach themselves to it. And you've got to be careful. In every true. Subject,
that is true.
There are people that will come and attach themselves and begin to embellish. And you can go everything from the Victorian era seances to the Montauk Project. There are people that maybe perhaps a very real situation will now attach themselves and embellish, bank on it, or even trying to bring in disinformation. So you ask me if I'm worried. Sometimes, because I always approach this intelligently, and I always try to suggest to the audience to, you know, keep an open mind, do some research, don't take it my word for it, go back out there and confirm for yourself that the Holmesburg prison experiments existed, and that a man named Alan Hornblum, who wrote a book called Acres of Skin, when I myself, Barry Eisler, and Barry Eisler was ex-CIA, and Steve Volk from the Washington Post all started talking to Hornblum at Holmesburg Prison. Mm-hmm. He confirmed, no, this was not just cosmetic experiments that were brutal on the prisoners. This was a mind control experiment. Mm-hmm. I've done my research, I know. And this is a very credible guy. And there were witnesses that came forward and said what they did, what the people who were running these experiments actually did to them. And it wasn't just a cosmetic experiment on the prisoners. So, you know, testing bubble bath and stuff like that. There were other right. things going on. And so I don't want to say guilt by association, but at least consideration by association. You should at least consider that something happened at Montauk. And I'm not saying dismiss the technologies or the extraterrestrial contact. They very well may have happened there. But if we focus on the most tangible, believable part of it as of right now, and that's changing every day with disclosure coming from the government.
Right, exactly.
These crafts and everything. I'm just very sober about how I approach it because I do want to prove things. And I'd love to reveal things and get people to think about these, especially atrocities, you know. Because it, in the end, I think it would help change things. And again, answering question, yeah, I think this, the way I'm speaking right now is somewhat dangerous. Because mm-hmm. I always insist on my television programs that we make sure these things are said. And I don't know, it could be pissing somebody off because a lot of weird things have happened. You know, the quality of the programs I've delivered, there's been some weird things. Everyone involved are like, how did that happen? Why did that happen? We don't know. Every single time I make something for TV. You know, and I'm not trying to over-dramatize this. I've never tried to exploit that. I'm telling you now that just some weird stuff has happened, specifically more in the administrative level. Like, we were supposed to be heavily advertised and all of a sudden it was taken away. And our show is better quality than anything they offer. And everyone agreed. Just weird stuff, you know? And this is a show they paid for and loved. So it's like just odd stuff happened. And I can't say for sure what it was. Could have been somebody waking up on the wrong side of the bed in the morning. Mm-hmm. It could have been they didn't like how we discussed things. They didn't like that we speak about things intelligently, that we inspire you to think for yourself, because it's been the antithesis of that lately. You know, they thinking for yourself is a bad thing right now. You're not allowed to do that.
Well, I think, you know, 20, 30 years ago, we used to see so many, you know, like the Charles Manson and the Jonestown and, you know, many other cultish where their minds are altered and believing that somebody is the Messiah and all kinds of thing. And I have to even go back to I don't know about necessarily government, but even just video games. Video games can be very mind consuming. I mean, I remember I love playing video games. I haven't played for a while, but I could sit there for hours and not even think about playing the game. And then all of a sudden you look up and it's hours later. So it shows you that your mind can be altered in ways of forgetting about, you know, time, and even with cults where your morals, values, and even your consciousness is altered in a different into somebody else's. So how did they alter, or how did they do mind control through, was it like electrical shock or psychic abilities or psychiatrist, you know, how did they even try to manipulate the minds of these young children?
So I believe this method was derived from Operation Paperclip, the Nazis that were brought over, a lot of them scientists. And those techniques were, I believe, were being used by the Nazis, where to some degree it's general practice, and not anything against the military at all. Like a lot of my family was in the military. What I'm trying to say is that when they're building a soldier in the military,
right,
they break you down first. Just like think about the training for Navy SEALs. They're breaking everybody down, breaking you down so they can rebuild you. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. So this, what it's suggested in these programs is that these people were reluctant subjects. They were kidnapped, okay? At least it's suggested. And same with the prisoners in Holmesburg Prison and MK Ultra. And you mentioned Charles Manson earlier. Well, there's a huge theory now that Manson was one of the, it's almost proven that he was an MK Ultra experiment, you know, because he was in the prison system before back out and started doing his thing. And, you know, he was controlling people with LSD. Well, they were controlling people then. Where do you think he learned all that?
Right.
So what they would do is a similar situation, because I believe MKUltra was a derivative from Paperclip. Paperclip was a Nazi scientist, so it went through that evolution and ended up allegedly at Montauk, where part of it is, let's break the person down. What's the most severe way to break a person down? Beat them, starve them, rape, all of these horrible things. Inject them with hallucinogens and scare the living hell out of them, scare them nearly to death, break them down, break down that psyche. And I believe it's also a deep psychological knowledge that you can insert suggestion in a person's mind once that personality is destroyed, according to Preston Nichols, that suggestion now can be put in somewhere. Now that we've broken them down in their basket case, we can put that suggestion in and then build them back up. And that suggestion would be triggered by symbols or words. And so this is what Nichols told me. And so that once they did that, he was sent in to rebuild them and make sure that those triggers were there and that they would react to them. That was one portion of it. So they could be used as Manchurian type candidate, you know, assassins. And some people say that Sirhan was one of those people.
I just did an interview about that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. And it's an amazing story. And I think is he's alive and out of prison, right? Or is he was released eventually.
I think he was released. I believe so. The lady that I interviewed wrote a book and talked to, you know, Robert Kennedy Jr. And she said that there's a lot of time missing from his brain. So, wow. Yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely they think it was some kind of a mind control.
Yeah. And again, I wouldn't be saying this stuff. I say it all with caution, but what I know to be true is what fuels my vernacular. I'm not going to sit here. I can tell you what I believe and why, but this stuff is real. Like the certain governments of the world have created assassins through mind control.
Right.
And I also believe that a lot of that is being used on the mass population in so many ways, even through advertising at the very least. There is a lot of manipulation. I think a lot of that's coming to the surface now. And according to a lot of the people I spoke to over the years, they are suggesting that this was, I don't want to say endgame, but this was all part of that progression in those early deep underground projects. Those subjects were being used to find out what eventually they could use on the mass population. And there's a lot of evidence to support there were other experiments on the mass populace. And again, I don't want to walk around being paranoid, but I think if you're aware that those things have happened, you become less susceptible to them. You can either be crazy and paranoid because of it and worry about everything, or you can say, now I know that that's being done. And at least I can recognize if it's being attempted to be done on me, and I can avoid certain things that might increase the strength of this, or, you know, I'm no longer susceptible to it because I know what it is.
Mm-hmm. And I believe paranoia can affect your psyche a lot. So yeah, it's not healthy to get paranoid about stuff like that. So
No. The most important thing is to live your life, to find your happiness, be good to the people around you, you know, and make the whatever dream it is that you want to make happen, focus on that. Don't focus on the atrocities of the world. I know we have to a little bit to get by, but you have to live. You have to, no matter what's going on in the world.
Now, most of these children that they brought to this facility, was it more local children, or was this children from all over the nation? Do you know that?
Yeah. Well, what was told to me, and again, this is all alleged. I can get into, I think the closest evidence that was found was with the group I mentioned earlier when I was making the dark files for History Channel. And I, you know, whenever I work on something for TV, I'm trying to make sure we actually do something. Something's accomplished.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't want to do it. What's the point? And so can you ask me the question again? I'm sorry.
Sure. I'm trying to figure out, you know, especially, I don't know when this project necessarily started bringing in the children that they were using for these experiments. But were these children, were they more locals, you know, from the East Coast, or were they bringing, you know, just, you know, kidnapping them from all over the country or even the world?
According to Al Bielek, Preston Nichols, they were mostly local runaway kids, you know, around suburbs of New York City or New York City itself. They were wrangled from there. Now, this story gets, I don't want to say a little crazy, but you know, they were saying that there are transports underneath the ground. Al Bielek mentioned this a long time ago. So just to get geography down for a second.
Right.
Brookhaven Labs is like middle of the island, sort of, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have New York City over here to the west. And then we go further east. We hit Brookhaven Labs and we go further east of Long Island. Keep going down the island. And then you have Montauk, right? So Bielek said that there's a whole circuit of underground trains, fast moving, you know, Leviton trains, you know, magnetic trains all underneath the ground, transporting people, transporting whatever, unbeknownst to everyone above the ground. And that one of the stops they would make or at least they would drive to Brookhaven Labs, middle of the island, and then the train would take them to the underground in Montauk.
Hmm.
There was some contradictions in a lot of the things they said, because I think the one major contradiction was when they walked out of the base to go meet in the Memory Motel and come up with this plan to kill Junior. Part of me feels like maybe two of these men or one of them had knowledge of something that really happened there, which is all the atrocious stuff, the boy experiments, right? They wanted to write about it, but they kind of tied it up in a nice pretty package to sell as a science fiction adventure story that might be true.
Right.
And they left out all of the beatings and the rape and the drug experiments and all that stuff. The Montauk boys are kind of still in the little book, but not really, not to the extent that I was exploring and have been, you know, for many years. And so it's hard to tell what's honest and what was embellished for the book, their right. book. But if I were to answer your question based off of what was done in other projects that we were able to prove, I'm assuming that these, for that particular base, because there were other places, the most of the people that were being incorporated into the project were local. And this is just me assuming.
Right, right. And I mean, was the murders that happened, was this more happened because do you think the children weren't complying, or they were just trying to experiment and just happened to die because of the way the experiment?
Yeah, I think they died because of the brutality of the experiments. They were expendable because they were trying to achieve something
right.
with the mind, and the kids died in the process. They died of fright. They died of drug overdoses. This is what was told to me by several of the gentlemen I interviewed, from the beatings themselves, the brutality of it, being injured, you know.
And how was the PT? I mean, I'm sure they have PTSD. How was from the people you interviewed that had you know, knowledge of this or even experienced the project itself, what was their, you know, because I think some of them are getting fairly older now, but mm-hmm. what was the mentality of who they are now, and how did it affect, and how did they even get away from this project alive?
So the three main gentlemen that were really telling the story in the beginning are all dead.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in recent years. Oh. Well, Al Bielek died in 2011.
Oh, wow.
But Duncan Cameron and Preston Nichols both died in the last few years or so. And, you know, you have Stuart Swerdlow, who's still telling that story. But I think someone who is credible to me the entire time, because he really wasn't trying to bank on this
right.
at all. And he always wanted his identity concealed. And he was the same guy in private with me that he was when he was telling the story for me, both Montauk Chronicles and the Dark Files. It was James Bruce, and that's not his real name.
Right.
And he's played with the idea of coming out further with it, but still hasn't. The guy's in his 50s, you know, and he just seems so genuine to me. The reason why I say genuine is the other gentleman who's still alive that tells this story, he's out there really banking on all the abilities that he claims to have acquired at the Montauk Project. He's constantly selling books, constantly doing, you know, conventions, and made a business out of it. James never even bothered.
Hmm.
You know, he wanted to tell his story. That's all he wanted to do. He just wanted to be compensated for a day's wages of lost work
right.
when he showed up. And again, I've spent time with him. I have had dinner with him a couple of times, you know, without the ski mask on.
Right.
And,
right.
He's the same guy. You know, we have long conversations about this, and he's in line with what was said that the children that were being used in the program, he was a bad kid. He was in trouble, and they were seeking out kids that were in trouble.
Right.
And he's just so real and authentic, the way he talks, the way he tells a story, his reactions to ideas and things that were put in his mind. And he's not banking on every word. He's just telling me his story, and seems to be coming from such an honest place for me, you know, right. Because again, I grew up around street kids and he's authentic. He's the real deal. And again, if he was sitting there trying to sell this story on a daily basis, of course I'd question it. Everyone who has a story, that they're allowed to sell their story. That's fine. But when you turn it into this, you try to use it for everything. It's just all about you. And there's no other reason to tell the story outside of you just making a few bucks. I have some questions, you know, especially when it's about a traumatic thing where you almost died and you were taken advantage of and you were beaten and perhaps raped. And, you know, okay, so there was, I believe her name was Christine DiNicola, right? She was one of the people that came forward to Congress in the congressional hearings in 1995, I believe. And then confronted, you know, Bill Clinton was confronted with this, but he reverted about only talking about the Tuskegee medical experiments, which again were all part of how crazy these experiments were. Unbeknownst to them, these gentlemen in the Tuskegee medical experiments were given syphilis, and they were told they were given free medical care. These are the people we're talking about, the people that did this. And so you have to consider there are many other things that they did during this time that we don't know about, including the Montauk Project. We haven't been able to confirm that yet. So James seemed to be the most believable to me because he seems damaged to me. He seems, there's scars on him, you know, not just on his skin, but something happened to that guy, you know, something really happened. Whereas I think the other gentleman seemed way too comfortable for my taste and happy.
Well, this project, I don't know when this stopped. I mean, did you have an opportunity to go tour this facility? Is it closed down now? What is there? And do you feel like it's like Area 51? It's become so exposed as the place where UFOs are located. It's almost unlikely they're there anymore because so many people watches it. So they've probably moved it somewhere else. So what is your take on, did the project just move to a different facility? And what was your take on it when you walked through the facility for the first time?
So when I was making Montauk Chronicles, I just walked through the topside defunct tower, the Sage Radar Tower, other buildings in the facility, and it's what you would expect. It's abandoned buildings. Right. There's a lot of rot, decay, things falling apart. But when I made the Dark Files, mind you, I financed Montauk Chronicles and did everything myself. The Dark Files was financed by History Channel. So we finally got a chance to hire some people, and we hired geophysicists. And they brought several different methods to look underneath the ground, one of which was something called electric resistivity imagery. And it was these spikes that were hammered into the ground. And you could do this for weeks in an area, but there was such a resistance from the management, the park management, the people who were allowing us to have the permits, they weren't allowing us to go past the gate. And we said, oh, it's a hazard. Okay, there is 200 yards between the gate and the tower. It is nothing that's going to fall from the tower and just leap 200 yards and hit people. We just wanted to get a little further towards the tower to do the readings. Right. I got into the tower illegally, you know, like when I made Montauk Chronicles. We couldn't do that when we were doing the History Channel show. We weren't allowed. So what we did, though, is go up to the fence, and Mike from GeoView, which was the geophysicist outfit, he brought his devices, he nailed the spikes into the ground, and his reading took a vertical slice of about, I don't know, 150 feet, just outside of the fence, where this tower is in the middle, and it's looming over a big cliff over the water.
Right.
And the drop is, I don't know, 50 feet.
Wow.
So, but what he was seeing was, no, there is an element of iron ore underneath the ground, which is rebar, man-made structure, not the access tunnels that everyone talked about that were covered in dirt, something deeper than that.
Hmm.
And the ceiling itself was 25 to 30 feet deep, just the ceiling of this structure. So he believed there was an enormous, this is just a vertical slice of like 150 feet or so. There's an enormous man-made structure underneath the ground. And he was convinced of that. And he had no dog in the fight. You know, he just wanted to, he was coming in with science and analyzing the place to give us a reading. The other thing that he found, and he felt maybe we shouldn't really talk about this on camera, but there was a location we weren't supposed to go to, and we did it anyway. And he brought a device that could see, I believe it was ground penetrating radar, that he could study not the ground. And he said it was in line with mass grave sites that he was hired to check out. Okay. And he said, I can't confirm what this is. Could be buried trees, could be whatever, but there are plots of organic material in line with mass grave sites buried in this area that we just checked out. So could that have been a potter's field for some reason, or could it have been an old cemetery or a burial ground for Montauk boys, you know? And all of that should be taken into consideration. The other thing that was found while we were there is we had, this structure existed. We had authentic video and photos from a guy named Brian Minnick, who spent a lot of his time, you know, researching this. I hope he told me he's going to work on a book and put it out. I really hope he does. He's probably watching this. Like, Brian, put the book out.
Do it, Brian. So,
but he's got some great stuff. And he had photos of what everyone called the acid house. Now, there were test patterns. Every room was painted this really odd pattern. This was not done by kids after the fact. You know, it was, there were checkered patterns and all of these things. This house was deliberately being used for something. Now, that was topside. So again, you have like these conflicting ideas where everyone said all the experiments happened deep beneath the ground, and a lot of people who worked at the base had no idea that there was an experiment or even a facility underneath the ground, because the access area was in a different place or several different places. This facility that I told you about with the patterns is topside and accessible topside. But then we talked to other people, and they said that worked on the base for the military itself. And they said, no, I never went in there. There were always rumors and everything like that. So you get all these stories and you put it together. I feel one day, at the very least, the first thing that anyone should do, because like my continuation of this is, I really don't want to go any further with my investigation. I'm writing a novel that has a lot of the factual things, or at least allegedly factual things, in the story with the characters in the novel, and it's called Montauk Boys. But I think if anyone were to go into this, just take what I've already done and go from there. Bring another group of geophysicists out there with the same equipment and start near the tower. Okay, because you might not have History Channel with you, so you won't have anyone restricting you, and get the readings that we were trying to get, and prove further that there is an enormous structure underneath the ground, because that's what all the officials denied. And once you do that, at the very least, you can prove they were lying about that, and take it from there. But I think the next step in anybody's investigation is just to pick up where we left off with the investigation we did for the Dark Files.
I want to ask this question, then I want to take a couple from the chat room. Sure. What do you think, what type of human weapons were created out of this project that maybe they use today?
I can only say what Al Bielek and Preston Nichols told me. And so they were training, allegedly, psychic soldiers. But again, this stuff has happened elsewhere. I've talked to, I spent some time with Remote Viewer Number One, and, you know, there's so many people. Okay, even as far back as, there is factual information to support that way back when Marvel was creating the X-Men,
right,
that there were government officials that came in and consulted with them about what they were working on. Yes. And so if you flash forward, look at the motion pictures that were being made. First of all, Manchurian Candidate, right? That was Frankenheimer in the, when was that? The 60s? Something like that. So, and then you go forward and you have like David Cronenberg's Scanners. You have Stephen King's Firestarter.
Right.
You have all of these, you have Brian De Palma's Fury. You have all of these things about government projects creating people with abilities, psychic abilities, you know, Scanners was very much that. So where did these ideas come from? And I think they've been out there for a very long time because there's some truth in them. Hmm. And so a lot of the stories I was told about particularly the Montauk Project are in line with a lot. I, you know, I grew up watching those movies. So then I'm being told this by Al Bielek in his backyard, and it's so exciting. You know, it's like, wow, you know, that's like that movie I grew up watching. This right. is amazing. Or, you know, umpteenth episodes of The Outer Limits or The Twilight Zone or anything like that.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like I said, it's amazing that a lot of what we watch on television is actually just, you know, depicting real world. Well, Andrea, we're going to kind of go back a little bit. And she says, what do you believe to be true of Preston Nichols' book? So I think we touched on that a little bit. But if you want to add to it, then please do.
Thanks, Andrea. Yeah, here's the thing. Like, I read the book way back, and then I spent a lot of time with Nichols. So I went to his house four times. And the first time that I went, he asked me to go inside something that he built that was in his lab, as he called it, called the healing machine. And I said, well, what is this? And he's like, it's going to change your DNA. It's going to fix you for life. It's going to heal you. So I laid down in this structure, and he had all these lights and all these tubes going in and out of this bed. And then he starts running this thing where you see all these lights. I mean, it was like Doc Brown. It was like hanging out with Doc Brown. And he even claimed Doc Brown was based on him. But what do I believe is true? I believe the experiments. There is a moment, if you watch Montauk Chronicles, where I confronted Preston about, in a way, how he felt about the boys being murdered and what he felt about that. I feel the reaction that came after that was so genuine. And after that was such an intense moment for both of us that, and this was at his home in Catskills, New York, up in the mountains, that I shut the, or at least made it look like I shut the camera off. I put the cap on. And he thought I shut it off, and his whole demeanor changed because he was at times kind of a wacky guy, even though he's very intelligent. And he looked at me and he was like, it's like he straightened up for a second and everything changed. And he was just like, you know, Chris, there's just some things I can't talk about on camera. And I was like, that's really weird. He straightened out, you know, and he seemed so lucid at that moment. And he seemed like he was a different person. It's almost like he was putting on the crazy act for me to distract people. It was so strange. But I believe in extraterrestrial contact. I believe that we've been visited by intelligent extraterrestrials. There are a lot of credible people over the years that support that theory, astrophysicists, and Air Force, and presidents, and all kinds of people, scientists. You know, so it's not the question of if I believe in any of this stuff. It's just what happened at Montauk, and was all of that stuff being said to cover up murder of children, kidnapping and murder of children? And I've always considered that as a possibility. But I believe, like, okay, so like I was talking to Lee Spiegel, you know, ufologist, writer, a while back, and he told me this story of there being a time travel experiment, and that Gordon Cooper told him about it. He thought Cooper was pulling his chain. And he said at the end of the conversation, he realized that Cooper was dead serious. And Lee is skeptical. So what I'm saying is, I think all of the elements of the Montauk Project, I believe, are possible. Part of me has strongly felt that maybe all of that didn't happen at Montauk. Maybe it was just this horrific mind control experiment, and that a lot of that was just covered up for disinformation. But then again, all of it could be true. After the last 2 years living in this world, And now with disclosure coming from our government, I believe maybe everything they said happened at Montauk. I'm sorry I couldn't offer a more a clear answer to that. But no, I'm
that
still
was great. That was great. Well, the next one is very, it should be fairly easy for you. Haunted House, that's, they go by that. Anybody know how to stream the Chris show Strange World on the Travel Channel? So I don't think it's on the Travel Channel, but.
Right. So outside of this country now, it's available in a lot of those things and it replays on TV. In this territory, it was picked up by Bill Abbott, who owns the Hallmark Channel, and he is going to premiere it on something else. But for research purposes, if you want to see it right now, just get in contact with me and I'll send you a link to watch the whole season.
There you go. Maddie, 1981. And this one, I kind of thought was funny because it's like, whatever happened to that documentary, the Montauk Chronicles? I gave up looking out for this documentary to be made back in the day. Wasn't you going to write a book or was it a documentary? Well, that's already been out. So I think for like 2016, right?
Yeah, it's been out for a while.
So
and so right now, also, it's available on my YouTube channel, Garitano7. You can watch it for free. And I think it's premiering on Tubi within a couple of days.
Oh, great.
And also,
great.
It's on Plex right now. So you get it. Plex is free. It's got a lot of great shows and movies on it. And all you have to do is just download it. Montauk Chronicles is on there. And it'll be on Tubi very shortly.
I'll have to reach out to you because I also, my show airs on Paranormal TV on the East Coast. I'll have to introduce you guys. Maybe you guys can work out something there.
Yeah, sure.
And then let's see, Andrea came back and says, because we were talking about kids and mind control on this, like Firestarter, and because you mentioned that earlier, so many movies and books about children who have superpowers. And then, so it is true. It is funny how, again, Hollywood predicts many of what really goes on when we think some things are so far-fetched. Do you feel like some of these, you know, movies, like you said, some of the CIA and certain people advise some of these movies such as Star Trek and X-Men and, you know, many different movie projects. Do you feel that this might have something to do with a lot of these superpowered children?
Yeah, I mean, we have proof that the governments have experimented with psychic abilities. There was something, some kind of interest in it because they put a lot of money and time into that. And I'm sure there are deeper programs and these stories come from someplace. And I've heard about the mind control experiments. And again, you can read the details yourself if you don't know about them. They're pretty horrific all over. And now we have proof that the government's, you know, doing an about face and saying, no, this strange technology that's flying through the sky exists and it's not of earthly origin. They know what's going on. They have a lot more awareness and knowledge than we have. And I think a lot of the things we speculate are true. And so do I believe that the governments of the world have experimented with psychic and perhaps telekinetic abilities? Yes, 100%. Yeah, of course, you know? And they leave it for entertainment purposes only for us because, okay, I can only assume that if these abilities are coming from human beings, we might have those abilities too. And we're encouraged not to really develop those things or even learn how. And now these days, there are people that are bringing that information out. And I learned some of those techniques that you'll see in Strange World. And again, if you go to my YouTube channel, look under on the description underneath Montauk Chronicles. Mm-hmm. The password and the link to Strange World is there. So, perfect. You can go right there and find it.
Yeah. And before we get out of here, because we're running out of time, Strange World, you know, talk about how you started putting this project for yourself together and how, it got picked up and what was off limits and what was okayed, because how television sometimes can say not so much and maybe, but how did you start Strange World?
So it was gradual. Montauk Chronicles
kind of opened the door,
the attention of several networks.
Yeah,
and Then History Channel, it was developed over a course of a year and a half, was The Dark Files, which is pretty much a sequel to Montauk Chronicles. And then Travel Channel got in touch and wanted to make a show with me. There was one concept that was kind of pitched to me I had no interest in. And I said, give me a couple of months and I'll come back and with something. And I designed Strange World. That's and Strange World was a variety. The thing that was being pitched to me was I get to go to underground bases for a bunch of years.
I would love to do that.
That's fine. We're talking 17-hour days, nine months on the road. You know, I want to do it for something that's worth doing it. So
right.
I came up with Strange World. I literally named it after an Iron Maiden song, you know, and
why not?
You know, but I wanted a variety. I wanted a variety of things to explore all of the things I was interested in. So the episodes that you see are all episodes I pitched. Out of 30, these were 8. And everything from looking into the curse of James Dean's car, little bastard, because, you know, he was in an accident and a lot of weird things happened after that. I just talked about that for a new episode of my podcast with Lee Raskin.
I'll have to check James it out.
Biographer. Yeah. But also the Montauk Project we explored in the first episode, and remote viewing and alien technology and artificial technology taking over the world. There's a variety of episodes. And it all, you know, caters to my tastes and the mysteries of the world and the paranormal. So we did one full season, and I had a lot of control. I think in the end, though, as a filmmaker, when you see, you know, the editing, and there's just so much that has to get done, and then everything is left in the hands of a lot of other people in terms of how it's advertised. And I think some things frustrated me, and I'm happy with what I decided to do after that, is I've made so far now 2 1-hour specials, new Strange World specials, and they're better than anything I made in the first season because full control over it until the end. And so we're going to do 4 more of those before we release them. And it's really exciting, you know, and there's another show that I developed that was greenlit before COVID hit that I'm going to also make through this new venture that I'm working on right now. And that includes my podcast, which will, I've done 7 episodes of it. It's called Off to the Witch, and it's accessible on all the major platforms right now. But the new episodes will be coming within a couple of weeks, and I'm excited about the variety of topics. And again, I only do things that I'm interested in. So,
that same here. When I first started, truth be told, actually before I was did entertainment podcasts, about 800 episodes of that. And so, at the end of it, I was like, I was just getting so bored of, you know, the same questions. And so, I decided to do Truth Be Told because it was more of a passion of mine. And, you know, I don't want to stick to just UFOs. I want to, you know, ghost and conspiracy and pretty much anything that just interests me. And so it's nice when you can bring along people that have similar interest with you. And, you know, that's why I always appreciate everybody that tap into the show every week, because, you know, It makes you more fulfilling because you know you have a bunch of people go along with you on your journey. So
yeah. These are fantastic discussions. It's something it's just been just like you, a lifelong interest.
Yeah.
So it always will be. I just don't want to, you know, when you're doing a network TV show, it's like you can get caught up in something for a decade.
Oh yeah. Look at Ancient Aliens. I mean, it's going on for a long time.
I was in an episode of that too. And we covered Montauk. But it's great. Working with networks are great. I just, the last 2 years put in perspective for me, I think there's another way to do this. Yeah. And what Final Cut is so important to me, having creative control is so important to me, that I would rather choose that. And I think it would also be better, you know, better as a business as well, in the long run, because again, you know, you have like this fixed salary and you could be working, you know, full, you know, double time days, and they own you. And they also own the decision-making process. And I'm not excited about that, but I wouldn't mind collaborating with a network if some things were different next time. So, but
now,
right
now, you know,
shows.
Now the knowledge you have. So, you know, I've worked with many people over the years that have their own TV shows, and, you know, like same with you. At the first season, you kind of get your feet wet and you're like, okay, this is what I want to do. This one I don't want to do. And if it's in it with a new network, you know, it usually turns out even better. So, but unfortunately, we're out of time, but you're going to have to come back because you have a lot more stuff to talk about, other subjects, and I would love to have you back. And I hope you could tell everybody where to find you and look more things up about your YouTube channel and podcast again.
Sure. I guess thank you so much too. And I'm happy to come back. I guess check me out on YouTube/Garetano. That's my last name, GARETANO and number 7. And that's where you can see a lot of my stuff. And then my podcast Off to the Witch can be found on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all the major sites. And new episodes will be coming very soon. And my new shows are in production right now. So if you like what you see, come and check it out. But everything, and also Strange World Season 1 can be found on the description underneath Montauk Chronicles on my YouTube channel. So you can access it from there.
Perfect. Well, thank you, sir. And everybody that was in the chat room and asking questions, we really appreciate it. And please like, subscribe, share the show, and show some love. That go to Chris's YouTube channel and follow him too. And Chris, thank you so much. And I hope you have a great 4th of July weekend.
You as well. Thank you so much. Thanks, Tony.
You got it. And everybody, thank you so much. And don't forget, every Friday I'm here. And on Wednesdays, you got Bonnie Burkard doing the Truth Be Told Transformation. And Robert Hensley is going to be starting back with Minuteman Report on Mondays at 3. So we're back in action. So until next time, this is Tony Sweet for Truth Be Told. Take care. This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media. Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.